All right, this one's called B. B E. Spirit is within us. Spirit surrounds us. Part of it may be sensed. Part of it is called manifestation. Part of it is unseen and is called void. To be with spirit is harmony. To be separate from spirit is disaster. To act with spirit, observe and follow. To know spirit, be still and look within. Spirit is within us. We are spirit. It is also outside of us. It is all the known universe. All that we can know of ourselves and of our universe cannot account for all that is spirit. What we know is merely the outer manifestation of spirit. The ultimate spirit is called absolute. We cannot know it directly because it has no definitions, references, or names. Our normal minds are incapable of perceiving where there is no contrast. Yet it is precisely this colorless infinity that is the underlying reality to this life. The only way to fathom is to remove our sense of division from it. In essence, we must plunge into the mystery itself. Only then will we know peace. Meditation. Prayer.
Please lay aside everything I think I know about this weekend. Be a book, alcoholism, addiction, 12 steps, myself, and especially you, God, so I may have one of my own experience. Help me see the truth and make it clear.
When we started doing the 2 minutes yesterday, who struggled to sit still and not go crazy for 2 minutes? Has anybody found that it's been easier? Over the last... It's 2 minutes, guys. It's the basis of meditation to start with something. So many people sit there and say, I can't meditate. Why don't you try a minute? Oh, I can't do that. Okay, well, why don't you try? And then when you succeed at a minute, then you go to two. When you succeed at two, go to three. I usually recommend two, and then three, and then five, and then seven, and then 10, and then 12, and then 15, and then 20. After you can do 20, you can do 45. It's really not much different. There's a point somewhere in meditation. For me, it used to happen between 10 and 12 minutes. Now sometimes it happens almost instantaneously, where I will, in my mind, just go somewhere. And time doesn't exist after that moment. It used to be between 10 and 12 minutes I would notice that time after 10 to 12 minutes just seemed to evaporate. And there was one time where I accidentally meditated for 45 minutes. Accidentally, because I set my timer for 20 minutes, but my phone was on mute. And I was having a really cool meditation. I was like, man, it feels like maybe I've been here a little bit longer than I thought. Looked at my clock and it had been 45 minutes. Completely accidental, but real easy. So, for those of you coming into this weekend that thought meditation was impossible, hopefully it's getting easier. There's less rustling around during the current meditations than the previous. Maybe you guys have all fallen asleep, I don't know, but something's different. Alright, so, chapter 5. There's this thing that we read in a bunch of AA meetings that nobody knows what it says. It's called How It Works. There's all sorts of people that ask questions like, how does AA work? There's a whole chapter devoted to it. Rarely have we seen a person thoroughly follow our path. Rarely have we seen a person who is thoroughly person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not give themselves only just a tiny bit to this simple program. Actually, it says those who do not completely give themselves to the simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. The honesty that's talking here is not cash register honesty, not stealing the money out of the register. It's talking about honesty with yourself. If you have ever relapsed, ever, you've not been honest with yourself. Because if you truly had the capacity to be honest with yourself, you would know that it's not going to ever be any different for you. You look at your experience and it abundantly confirms that you're going to fail. There are such unfortunates. They're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. I don't know that I believe that those people exist. I do watch people that act as if that exists, that appear to be naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. But I think that there's something else going on there. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Three times, honest and honesty are spoken of here. So our stories disclose in a general way what I was like, what happened to me, and what I am like now. What it was like, I have no idea, but I know what I was like. If you decided that you want at least some of what Tarek and I are presenting to you, and you're ready to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to do the steps. So, it goes on to say things like half measures availed us nothing. That's not true. Half measures avail you a bunch of pain and misery. That's something. Then it goes on to say something strange thing. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as the program of recovery. So the steps are the program. It's not the fellowship. It says right here. And these summarize the big steps, which I talked about last night, which are contained in the doctor's opinion in 1 164. So, go on to page 60 and it talks about, there's a part of the 12 and 12 that I really just don't care for. I don't remember what step it's after, but so, it says, many of us exclaimed, what an order, I cannot go through with it, do not be discouraged, no one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles, we are not saints. Anybody ever want to understand what's the point of the steps? What's the point of doing all this stuff? Cool thing is, it tells you right here. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. So what's the point of the first step? To grow along spiritual lines. Second step, to grow along spiritual lines. 3 through 11, grow along spiritual lines. Sponsorship, to grow along spiritual lines. The whole point of the program is to grow along spiritual lines, to effect a more conscious contact with that power that is already working in your life. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. Here's the part where I don't like what the 12 and 12 says. It actually says it's progress, not perfection. Versus here it says we claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. So if I'm aiming for perfection and I miss, am I going to be pretty close to it? If I'm aiming for mediocrity and I miss, I'm drunk. Which one of these steps can I leave out and still maintain sobriety? I don't know. Maybe I should aim to do all of them and see what happens. Here in a lot of meetings, people talk about that they'll finish their share with, well, hey, it's progress, not perfection. And they usually are sharing about the fact that they got in a fight with their boss, they're beating their wife, they're kicking the dog, they're cheating on their taxes, they're doing all this stuff. But hey, it's progress, not perfection. They're trying to use their disease as an excuse for why they're still acting in a shitty way. But if I'm acting in a spiritual way, I'm not doing all those things. I may from time to time, but I'm not going to miss that often. And so if my life becomes about trying to live in such a way as to work towards perfection, I'm probably going to end up somewhere close to it. I looked it up one time, and it's if you're 1 degree off when you try to circumnavigate the goal, the globe, you end up something like 500 miles off course. 1 degree. What happens if I'm trying to circumnavigate the globe and I have no direction? How far off am I going to end up? Who knows? Might get lucky. If you don't do the steps, you might get lucky and you might stay sober. But when you were trying to cook that shit up or get the right combination of alcohol, pot, whatever it was that you had going on, didn't you like to try to get as close to the mark that you were aiming for? So, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter of the agnostic, and our personal adventures. Isn't it fun how, like, all the crazy shit that we used to do, the book just calls personal adventures? I parked my car in somebody's living room in my personal adventure, right? Who talks like that? But we do. Before and after, make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic or addict and could not manage our own life. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, that means mine or yours or anybody else's, and that God could and would if he were sought. So, Tarek's going to talk about the importance of A, B, and C.
In the original manuscript of the big book, at this point, there was a little phrase that they took out because they didn't want to be hard on us. It says, if you're not convinced or sold on these three pertinent ideas, you ought to reread the book to this point or else throw it away. There is no reason to move forward if you're not convinced of A, B, and C. So when I'm taking a guy through the steps and we get to this part, we're typically sitting across a table from one another like this, and I'll have my big book out, and I back up, and I said, look, I want you to convince me that A, B, and C are true based out of your experience with what we've discussed in the big book up to this point. You have to be convinced that you're an addict and alcoholic. Why? If you look at your experience physically, once you start, all bets are off. That's what your experience confirms to you. And then your experience shows how you've chose over and over not to get high, and you got high anyway. Or you drank anyway. And then we look at unmanageability. What is your life when you don't have a solution? What does your life look like? What do the relationships look like? What does the fear look like? What's the anxiety look like? What does the happiness look like? What's the usefulness look like? They need to be able to convince me that they understand the ABCs out of experience. Once you see A, then that's the light, the truth. A is the truth. Do you see the truth? Now B is the light. It's when you become willing to believe that God can restore your sanity. And then C is when you make a decision to go after that power. And the paradox is you don't really have to go anywhere because the power resides deep down within. So I want to read something real quick. There's a basket of fresh bread on your head, yet you go door to door asking for crusts. Knock on the inner door, no other door. Sloshing knee deep in clear stream water, you keep wanting a drink from other people's water bags. Water is everywhere around you, but you see only barriers that keep you from the water. A horse is moving beneath the rider's thighs, yet still he asks, where's my horse? Right there under you. Yes, this is a horse, but where's the horse? Can't you see? Yes, I can see, but whoever saw such a horse? Mad with thirst, he cannot drink from the stream running so close by his face. He's like a pearl on the deep bottom, wondering inside the shell, where is the ocean? His mental questionings form the barrier. His physical eyesight bandages his knowing. Self-consciousness plugs his ears. Stay bewildered in God, and only that. The last place we look, the last analysis, deep down inside. That's what that passage there that I read says to me. I look for God or a sense of ease and comfort in so many things outside myself. I grew up with a belief system that said if I want to feel something in here, it's going to take something out here. Now, this is contrary to the way I've lived my life. We're asking you guys to turn inward. Turn inward to find the solution to your problem. So being convinced of the ABCs is what brings you to step three. Read the next paragraph. Being convinced of what the ABCs, we're now at step three, which was the decision to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood Him. Well, just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? Sounds like a pretty big decision, right? Don't you love it? They tell you not to get in a relationship in your first year. They say don't make any major decisions, but 3 weeks in, we're asking you to turn your will and your life over the care and direction of God. It's a pretty fucking big decision, people. Well, what is the will and what is the life? My simple definition of that is you and I love to do what we want to do, when we want to do it, how we want to do it, and we don't think about the ripple effect about what we're about to do. That, to me, is an extreme example of self-will run riot. Another way of looking at it, you know, when you have a net worth and you're nearing the end of your life, people recommend you write a last will and testament, right? Have you ever guys wondered why they call it a last will? What do you do? Let's say you're worth $1 million and you're chopping up your estate and giving this much to this person, this much to that person. What are you doing when you're putting a value on each person? You're judging them. Your last judgment and testament. So what if turning your will and your life over to God, part of that's turning your judgments over to God? I mean, I love when people say they're not judgmental, but then like when they see certain types of people that look certain ways, they sort of walk away from them without even like really acknowledging. They're just that's all judgment, right? We only mix with certain people, or I'm only going to work in this type of industry. I'm only going to live in this part of town. It's all judgment. One of my biggest character defects is my prejudice. And I don't mean prejudice in terms of black and white. I mean prejudice in my preconceived ideas about what I'm about to go experience or what I'm looking at. I would love to report to you today that that's been eradicated, but it has not. And I doubt that it will be eradicated while I'm alive. It's gotten a ton better. I try to see things in their totality, as they are, without a veil of perception. But that's the ideal that I attempt to grow towards. So
it was funny, in my first inventory that I wrote, I had a bunch of resentments against people that were judgmental. And when I wrote out the inventory, what I learned was that I was judging all the people that were being judgmental. And here's what's interesting is that you cannot see something in somebody else that you are not aware of in yourself. Mm-hmm. Because if you're actually neutral to whatever it is, you can't see it. It doesn't exist to you. So when you're criticizing somebody of being pompous or arrogant or judgmental, guess what? You're pompous or arrogant or judgmental. Perception is projection. How does your projection look today?
So the ABCs are step 3, part A. The truth, the light, and the way. A is the truth, B is the light, C is the way. When you get down to the last paragraph, it says the first requirement is that Tarek has to be convinced that his life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Where I just described self-will to you, so every year I look at my life to see how does this look? You know, am I still living by self-propulsion? Am I always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good? Do I try to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in my own way? Am I a producer of confusion rather than harmony? Am I indignant, angry, self-pitying? What is my basic trouble? Am I really a self-seeker, even when I'm trying to convince you that I'm kind? Am I a victim of the delusion that I can violently twist and pull out of life happiness if I only manage well? Am I in my best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony? So I start to look at my family, I start to look at work, I start to look at my circle of friends, I start looking at the home group, and I'm taking a current snapshot of this. This is the second surrender. I was blessed with a surrender to crack cocaine and whiskey early on. But it took 18 months before I saw this. before I will call it hitting bottom with the second half of the first step, but also coming up against the what it really means to have this third step going on in your life in terms of rubbing up against it and really trying to still play God. Very little changed about my character in those first 18 months other than a desire to do whatever I had to do not to get high and not to drink. But a lot of the behaviors that were there in addiction stayed with me for 18 months. A lot of behaviors went away. Like I wasn't stealing or cheating anymore. But now it had turned into punching the clock at work a little earlier. I called and have them punch me in before I get there. Or I leave early and have a friend of mine punch me out. Right when I was, that was in the early recovery job, I was still doing stuff like that. I was still sleeping with anything that had a heartbeat, pretty much in early recovery. That was part of my experience. I was still manipulating my parents. I was spending money like I had a lot of money. And so at 18 months, I didn't have an obsession to smoke crack or get high, but my life was completely unmanageable. Personal relationships, a lot of it was a wreck. I was full of fear, a little bit of misery. I was bored. I couldn't sit in solitude. That's a problem. And that's when I discovered my current sponsor that I've had for the last 8.5 years. One of my sponsors. And we went deeper. We went deeper into this step work, and I realized that the surrender to self had not really taken place. It had not been given to me yet. So I began to apply myself to this work because I saw that living a spiritual path had a lot to do, had more to do with my conduct in my life as opposed to not drinking and not using. And it took this third step to do that for me. So these pages, 60 to 62, are wonderful in describing us clean and sober and how we show up. And so then on page 62, they finally tell you what the problem is. What do you think would have happened if they put this on page 1 in the big book? If they told you on page 1, as soon as you cracked the book, Tarek, selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of your trouble. You're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. You know what you do? You step on the toes of your fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt you, seemingly without provocation. You throw your hands up and say, what did I do? But invariably, always, I have found that at some time in the past, I made a decision based on self or ego, which has now placed me in a position to be hurt. I don't know about you, but it says you reap what you sow. What goes around comes around.
This is always fun. Who in here believes in karma? Who in here believes what goes around comes around? All right, so they actually all seem, because there's times where we'll ask that question, who believes in karma, and like nobody will raise their hand. And then you ask, who believes what goes around comes around? Everybody raises their hand. Same thing, right? Our book believes in karma. That's what it just said. You reap what you sow. People are responding to you the way that you're interacting with them. The experiences that you're getting are coming back to you exactly as you're presenting them. Your perception is your projection. When I'm having a good day, where'd all these nice people come from? When I'm having a shitty day, it doesn't matter. If you try to be nice to me, you are an asshole. Anybody else observe that of themselves? What does that have to do with the other person at all? Nothing. It has to do with what my mind frame is. If you're sitting in here and you're bored and you're not getting any information out of it, it has nothing to do with us. We don't take it personally. It has everything to do with you. Everything to do with you.
So the next sentence in the next paragraph, first sentence, is the greatest statement of hope in Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous and any fellowship that uses this big book. It says, Tarek, your troubles, we think, are basically of your own making. They arise out of yourself. and you're an extreme example of self will run riot, though you usually don't think so. And above everything, which means above everything, Tarek must be rid of this selfishness. He must, or it will kill him. God makes that possible, not Tarek. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without God's aid. Tarek has had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but Tarek cannot live up to them even though he would like to. Neither can Tarek reduce his self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on his own power. He has to have God's help. So it just told me that my selfishness will kill me, and I can't do anything about it other than seek God. There's a question that you have to answer. Do you believe that to be true? Do you think your selfishness has the power to kill? And do you think there's anything you can do to remove your selfishness? In my experience, there isn't. I just submit to this course of action on a regular basis. This is the greatest statement of hope in the big book, because it means that Tarek does not, that the world and the people in it don't have to change for me to be okay. Okay? That's why it's a statement of hope, the greatest statement of hope, because if all the things going wrong in my life were your fault, that means I don't get free until you come tell me I'm sorry. That you own up for your role in things. I've made enough amends to know that's just not the case. So, step 3, section A, the ABCs, be convinced. Step 3, section B, the requirement that your life run on your belief systems of how it should work is hardly a success.
Does anybody have any evidence of that?
Who in here's life looks okay running it the way you want to run it?
Looks okay? Yeah. You chose to be here?
Look, hey brother, if you're sitting in this workshop at the Bridges of Hope, shit ain't going right.
Your little plans and designs. Let's see. How old are you?
19.
At 19, I want to be sitting at the Bridges of Hope with a bunch of smelly guys in a room listening to two guys talk about God. Let's see. Yeah, that sounds great. Let's do that. So the fact that you are in this moment at this time means something, at least small, has failed.
Oh, I was, amen. I was just as delusional as you at one point.
It's just halfway went okay.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it fully went okay, but I did answer your question halfway okay.
No, you did.
And the truth is, for every person in this room, whether they know it or not, their spirit brought them to this moment specifically for a reason that they do not yet understand.
Right.
Or they wouldn't be here. They can reject the experience, but they're still having the experience of being here. Something in spirit world forced them to be here, and because I believe that we participate with spirit in spirit world, means something I've done brought me here. And I can deny that all day long, but I know deep down inside that there were no other circumstances that could have possibly happened other than the exact ones that happened, which have me sitting here now.
Mm. Bottom of page 62, this is our decision. It's the third step decision. That hereafter, or this is the how and the why of it. First of all, we have to quit playing God. Why? Because it doesn't work. Next, we're going to make a decision that hereafter in this drama of life, the theater, God's going to be that director and we're going to be the actors. God's going to be the principal and we're going to be his agents. We're going to be empowered. Empowered and have an agency of God, for God, to help his kids, to help his creations. We are the children, he is the Father. Most good ideas are simple, but this concept is the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. When we sincerely take such a position, so there's a question, are you willing to take this position? In my opinion, what the position is that your life is no longer your business. It never really was, but now you're just going to acknowledge that it's not your business. Who's in your life, how much money you have, where you work, where you live, you place that in, you say, universe, you take care of this. But what is our business is our conduct in our life. I have to have a perspective of how I'm engaging with God's kids. That's how I look at the third step. That's my position. All sorts of remarkable things will follow. I have a new employer. Being all powerful, he provides what I need. Here's the condition. If I keep close to him and perform his work well, established on such a footing, I become less and less interested in myself, my little plans and designs, and more I become interested in seeing what I can contribute to life. I see new power flow in. I enjoy peace of mind. I discover I can face life successfully. And I become conscious, there's that word again, conscious of his presence, aware of his presence. I have lost my fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. I have been reborn, which means I had to die. On some level, many things in me have died over these 10 years. And there's been a rebirth, an ongoing rebirth process because of this program of action and other things I've done in conjunction with the 12 steps. So that is step 3, part C, the decision. So when I'm taking a guy through the steps, I say, okay, this decision you're about to make is a contract. And the contract says that God's going to direct and you're going to act. What does that mean to you? That God's the principal and you're the agent. What does that mean to you? That God's the father and he's the child and you're the child. What does that mean to you? That God's your boss and you're the worker. What does that mean? So I have them reflect on it. I have them sit with it for a specific period of time because the big book says later on, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to God. So I don't rush with this step. It's a big deal. And the prayer on page 63, that's the affirmation. That's step 3, part D. 4 parts to step 3. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a few moments of silence. And all that would like to participate, you don't have to participate. You can get on your knees. You can stay in your seat. I'm a guy who believes that being on my knees and praying is just an act of humility, but God does not care if I come to him on my knees or sitting down or standing up. That's just the way I believe. But I do pray a lot on my knees because I think it's a submission for me. It's an act of reverence and respect because I don't know about you guys and where you're from, but people are dying left and right in Atlanta, Georgia right now. They're dying left and right. And for whatever reason, this power that I choose to call God wakes me up every day with the same degree of willingness that I had the day before. And for that, I am grateful and I have an extraordinary amount of respect. So let's take a few moments of silence and then we're all going to say the third step prayer together.
If you want to.
If you want to. Don't have to. And then we're going to take a break. Prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties. Victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with thy power. All right, let's take a break.